You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
This is Kristen Farrick for The Art World Demystified, and I'm here with Amish Morel, editor of C Magazine, Contemporary Art and Criticism, based in Toronto. Amish, thank you so much for being with us today.
Kristen, thanks for having me.
So what, just quickly off the top, what are you working on right now?
Right now I'm working on the next issue of C Magazine, which is on performance art, and just this morning we were deciding the cover image, and it's a really exciting issue because it's really about the transdisciplinary nature of performance art, but also contemporary art. And so we're looking at the way in which film connects, performance connects with film, with textual practice, using scripts, with writing, ideas like the voice within performance art, a whole range of, also the image in performance art. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is artists using all kinds of different media in their work in ways that enable them to reflect on one another. And it's a really exciting issue for that reason. The Center Artist Project is by Annie McDonnell, where she's worked with historic images of political protests in Canada, Britain, the United States, and she's working with performers who reenact the positions adopted by protesters when they're being apprehended by the police, the kind of extreme passivity that they have to, like, the pose of extreme passivity they have to hold so they don't get manhandled, so they get carried away gently. And so she's really going into the way that resistance is embodied, but also the way it's visualized, because those gestures are also about the way it's a performance of an image, and it's performed for the camera. And the cameras are there to photograph the police to make sure nothing really bad happens, and so on. So it's this very, very complex and rich reflection on embodiment, image, history, politics, protest. And she's done it with this way that's incredibly sophisticated, and every time I look at it, it opens up in a new way to me. So that's one of the threads within this next issue, and I'm very excited about that particular project.
Interesting. And C Magazine is based in Toronto, but does it reach across the country, or what is its position in the Canadian art scene?
It's based in Toronto and has been based in Toronto since 1983 when it first began as C Magazine. But we really span the whole country, and we try to, in every issue, to get content from not just Toronto, and not just Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, but Atlantic Canada, the prairies, the west, the north, as best we can. But it's not just that, it's an international magazine that's distributed in the United States and in Europe. It has a very strong presence amongst Canadian artists who are working internationally. And that's a big part of our mandate, is to position Canadian artists in international context. And so we really see important critical practices as not being merely local or being national, but they're more and more global practices. And so how do we connect what's happening in Sackville, New Brunswick, with what's happening in Sweden? And there's a lot of common points of connection across these vast geographies. And so this is, it's really, for a long time, our tagline was contemporary international art. Now it's contemporary art and criticism.
Yes. And what do you see, like, in terms of criticism, what is your approach to critical writing and editing? Do you write negative reviews of?
We write all kinds of reviews, and we write all kinds of content, but really we're interested in the context of art making, the reasons why particular practices matter in this moment, how an artist's work or perhaps even a cultural object, what it tells us about the moment in which we live in a way that opens it up in a way that's critical, as useful, that somehow illuminates the present. And there's all kinds of ways that artworks do that. And that's what we're looking for. And it's something that happens in all sorts of different writing, and often in unexpected places, and by all sorts of writers. And when we're working with writers, and especially new writers, and they ask, you know, what are you looking for in a review? Mm-hmm. We say, we're looking for a really good idea. And I find more and more as we try and diversify our content, diversifying our content means working with new writers often who may not have written for art magazines. What we're looking for is someone who can really shed some important new insight into contemporary practices. A great example of that is a couple of issues ago, we commissioned a piece by the anthropologist Zoe Todd. And she's an indigenous Canadian scholar who's been studying in Britain for the last, working on her doctorate. And she wrote a really interesting piece on citation and looking at philosophy. Mm-hmm. And the way that philosophers were referring to a particular canon, which is extremely white, mm-hmm. and asking, why are there no indigenous philosophers? Why are there no black philosophers? And she was calling for, as an indigenous intellectual practice, citing indigenous knowledge systems and paving the way for thinking about how we do that. And Zoe Todd is an anthropologist, mm-hmm. and she became this remarkable interlocutor into the art world because she was starting to be read by curators and mm-hmm. by critics and by artists. And it was really interesting to have her voice helping us think about how we think.
Mm-hmm.
And so it meant bringing someone into the magazine who really was not an art critic in the mm-hmm. kind of conventional sense. And we do that more and more. We did a poetry issue. And for the reviews, we said, let's get poets to review exhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them wrote really unexpectedly lucid and really brilliant and incisive and critical reviews. They were very nuanced and rich in terms of their readings of these exhibitions, mm-hmm. but often had very, at points, very kind of sharp and critical readings of those same exhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really paying attention to the written form itself mm-hmm. and thinking about what are the voices we want to develop.
Right. So in terms of your magazine has international reach, but who do you see as your individual readers?
Well, our readers are very specialized in the sense that we're not the kind of magazine that's picked up by people who know nothing about art at the newsstand and they go, suddenly they learn about what's at the AGO or mm. what's at the National Gallery, or they see who are the five hottest artists in Canada right now, which is impossible to define.
Right.
It's a very problematic notion. It tends to be read by curators, by artists, by writers, by graduate students, by professors,
mm-hmm.
By museum directors, by other critics. And it's a place in which that conversation takes place amongst those different actors.
Yes.
It has a very different role than, say, Art in America, Canadian Art,
mm-hmm.
A lot of other publications which are really about educating a general public. We try and make it accessible to a general audience, but it's not a magazine in the way a magazine typically tends to operate in presenting you faces and places and
mm-hmm.
going-ons and so on. It's not a journalistic publication. It's a very much an in-depth, critical document
mm-hmm.
that's really, in some way, an extension of a critical take on contemporary practice. So we're trying to push that conversation forward with that public,
and still be very readable.
To be interesting. That's what we mm-hmm. strive to. But to be interesting to an audience who has a fair degree of sophistication
yes.
in terms of the understanding of art.
Right. And what's your background?
My background is, I have an extremely varied background. I mean, I'll tell you where I'm from, and this always, for me, is very relevant. I'm from Cape Breton Island.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up there in the 1970s and 1980s and 1990s, and came to Toronto in 1992 to do an undergrad at York University in environmental studies. I'd always been interested in art practice.
Mm-hmm.
Both my parents, my mother still is an artist, my father was an artist in the 1960s and 1970s and died in the 1980s. And so I was sort of grew up surrounded by artists, and but when I was at York, I was interested in creative writing. I was interested in visual art and photography. Mm-hmm. I was interested in environmental studies, and particularly environmental philosophy and mm-hmm. environmental literature, which I had really had spent all my teenage years reading and thinking through. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing a master's in really looking at social movements and cultural practices within social movements. And then I did a PhD that was about photography and historical consciousness mm-hmm. And ideas of temporality and memory. And what happened for me in that moment of being a graduate student here in Toronto and feeling very alienated in my studies and being in the mm-hmm. library and reading through theory all the time and being in mm-hmm. seminars with people who were trained to become academics, I kind of came to the art world through the back door. I literally walked into a party and I said, wow, they're having such great conversations here. Mm-hmm. I remember going to, you know, a party at a house on maybe Borden Street in 2001 and just having a conversation with Massimo Guerrero, who's an artist from Montreal, mm-hmm. and Louis Jacob and Kika Thorne and Adrian Blackwell and a whole bunch of people, and being like, here are these people who have taken these ideas and enact them through material practice. Mm-hmm. And suddenly there is this community which was very interested in these conversations and about translating them into like a lived everyday practice, which is yes. what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. My father was an artist, and abandoning the New York art world in 1972, like coming out, finishing the Whitney studio programming and saying, okay, I'm going to go to Cape Breton Island and I'm just going to become a farmer and like just make my life there and like cut my own lumber to build mm-hmm. things and just participate in this economy.
Yes.
It made sense to me that there's this world in Toronto that was also about embodying ideas in this urban context, mm-hmm. and the parallel was very immediate. And of course there are people who had been in both places who were artists and theorists and mm. intellectuals who also were about developing a life practice that somehow reflected mm. that. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of enthralled, and I could go to shows and people said, hey, I like what you're saying about this work. I like your critique of that review. Mm-hmm. Do you want to write something? Mm-hmm. And so I started writing about things and people published them. And it sort of evolved into teaching and then into editing C Magazine. Hmm. So it's a very countercultural knowledge economy within the art world that to me makes a lot of sense, that really values alternative ways of thinking and ways of being.
Well, sometimes the art world tends to sort of spin on itself, and a lot of the conversations become very mm-hmm. Internal. And really, art is about can be about anything. And so, bringing different points of view is actually refreshing in the art mm-hmm. in the art world, to my mind. So, you also with C Magazine, you also have done some interesting programming. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little bird's eye view into some of the things that you've done? And why does a magazine do programming anyway?
Well, it's interesting. There's a bunch of reasons why I do programming. And one is there's more and more pressure from funders to develop audience.
Right.
And programming is a way of doing that. I don't hold a whole lot of faith in that idea of in and of itself.
Direct relation between programming and audience.
Yeah, I mean, there's a culture and a community around a magazine. A magazine is not just the print distribution, mm-hmm. it's people's investment in it and the way it contributes to conversations outside of it. Mm-hmm. And it reflects those conversations and archives them for historians. And
yeah.
We definitely have that role, but with programming, for a long time we did the talks at the Drake Hotel mm-hmm. on a Tuesday or Thursday night, and panel discussions related to issues, and they were great. They were really fantastic events. But I was really interested in taking those conversations out into the world, quite literally. Mm-hmm. And we did initial walking in contemporary art practice, and I was like, let's do a walking symposium, where I do a whole bunch of events mm-hmm. where people come and participate in walks, mm-hmm. and where an artist we have an artist who directs that process. Mm-hmm. So we did, Jessica Thompson did a sound walk in Parkdale where she guided us through Parkdale. I had to walk down Parkdale on a beautiful spring mm-hmm. evening when the streets were packed, blindfolded, being assisted by two people. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. It totally transformed my senses of the space around me. And I still can't believe I did that. It was a really radical intervention. Sarah Cullen also did a workshop on walking and has these walking devices where you simply, it's a simple little device that creates a drawing based on walking through the city, an automatic drawing. And we did something else called the Sauna Symposium. And we published an issue a couple of years ago. It was called The Wet Issue. Mm-hmm. And it was a play off a now defunct magazine from California that was founded by an architecture school dropout who was interested in bathing culture. And he created this magazine on a magazine of gourmet bathing, but it was also about avant-garde art practices, you know, conceptualism, punk music. Mm-hmm. And it became this real kind of zeitgeist publication. And he still writes about aesthetics in interesting ways. So we did a wet issue which referenced that and was really about the body and the porosity of the body, mm-hmm. about environment, atmosphere. And in conjunction with the issue, we did a sauna symposium because the University of Toronto has a traditional Finnish log sauna mm-hmm. in Caledon that anybody affiliated from U of T can go and use. And it's next to a beautiful pond. And so we got Fred Thompson, who's an architect who has studied Finnish sauna culture for decades, and he did this basically like a seminar in the sauna mm-hmm. about sauna practices and history and culture. We had Gina Badger and then my partner Diane Borsato create a special tea infusion that was about the landscape, burdock root from the earth from that was harvested on the site, which one could ingest to ground oneself. Diane made a mint tea from mint that she found there mm-hmm. to sort of elevate our thoughts. They were served. It was served before the and after the women's only sauna. Jamie Ross, an artist from Montreal, who spent lots of time with the Radical Fairies, and he's a bona fide witch. He's like this queer punk like witch in Montreal who makes this interesting art that's about place. And in history and about culture and it's a really kind of he's a great performer mm. too, and so he had this phenomenal Radical Fairies ritual in the sauna at the very end, right as the sun was going down, mm. right at the late fall in November, right before the snow came. It was magic. Mm. So yeah, we started doing these programs are much more about embodiment and the body as a kind of instrument for mm-hmm. knowing mm-hmm. and the body as a way of activating and creating knowledge about place. So that's one thing, and we're trying to develop more programs along those lines. And I just started doing these bi-weekly running events where it's called Running with Art Critics mm-hmm. where I do like a 5-gallery 5K. So it's a way to get your exercise,
yes.
and it's a way to see some art, and it's a way for us to perform some live criticism.
Uh-huh.
So we're working on that. And
that's sort of a breaking down this audience performer type mm-hmm. Way of presenting something, where the people who come are actually become part of the
yeah,
the
they're not
experience.
Passive bodies in a seat.
Yes.
They're actually out there having to walk the walk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. So what are you working on yourself now?
I'm working on a couple of things. C Magazine also sees programs. We're trying to develop a few new programming projects. I really love the programming, and for me as an educator, mm. I teach at OCAD in the graduate program in criticism and curatorial practice. Mm-hmm. And I've taught at different universities, and I'm really interested in the places where learning can occur mm-hmm. Outside of formal institutions, out there in the world, in nature, in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in the backwoods of Cape Breton, so I feel really, I need to be outside. Like I'm a real agoraphile. Mm-hmm. I need to be outdoors as much as I possibly can. So my projects tend to follow that. And there's a couple things I'm working on. I'm working on an exhibition at the Doris MacArthur Gallery mm-hmm. that will be mounted in September that's about finding ways to activate that particular geography and topography and finding artists who will work with students and the public to explore that landscape and learn about it mm-hmm. and produce knowledge about that particular site.
That's overlooking the lake, is it?
University of Toronto, Scarborough, is on the Highland Creek mm-hmm. in Scarborough. And on the other side of the campus, so one side is Highland Creek, which is a valley. The other side is the Rouge Valley, mm-hmm. which is soon to become Canada's first urban national park. So it's in this amazing interstitial urban natural landscape. Mm-hmm. And those spaces to me are of a lot of interest because as a country boy who lives in the city now, I spend a lot of time exploring those spaces because mm-hmm. they're familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of spaces we'll be looking to activate with that show. So I'm working on that, and I'm also going to be guest faculty at the Banff Center in late September, mm-hmm. along with my partner, Diane Borsato. And so we've been doing projects that deal with, we've been calling them loosely outdoor school. Mm-hmm. Some of them with mycologists. We'll be leading a mushroom foray there. But also involving artists in activating an experience of the outdoors. Mm-hmm. So we'll explore some of that at Banff.
And what is this thing about slime mold?
Oh, slime mold. Slime mold is very interesting. I'm curious, why do you ask about slime mold?
Well, I heard that you were interested in slime mold, and I'm just wondering if it figures in your programming. Or
It's very funny because when I was growing up in Cape Breton, we had somebody used to drop in all the time, and his name was John Bonner. And he was a biologist who was the chair of biology at Princeton. And when I went to York and I had to take a humanities course and I read Darwin's Origin of the Species, I opened up the book I bought at the bookstore, like all these other 500 students. And the introduction was by John Bonner. And I said, John Bonner had coffee in the kitchen mm-hmm. in Big Interval like 2 months ago. And I was telling him I was going off to York. And he said, oh, yeah, York University. I gave a talk there once. But John Bonner discovered slime molds. He kind of developed that as a category. He really learned them as a scientist and was able to categorize them as a species that is neither. It's a fungi, but it's also exhibits many of the characteristics of an animal, in that it has intelligence and it's predatory and so on. Mm. And yet, it's single cellular. So it really confounded all the the taxonomy of mm-hmm. biology. And now it's been well defined. Mm-hmm. We did a program at C Magazine about 5 years ago in conjunction with our animals issue. Mm-hmm. And we did three short talks on animals. Mm-hmm. Three talks, each for 15 minutes. And we had an expert on birds come and talk about birds. We had someone who ran a pig rescue farm, mm-hmm. which she had in her townhouse in the suburbs. So people who have pet pigs, and they discover they can't have a pet pig in their condo in Toronto, mm-hmm. and it's really a messy, bad thing to do, and so they have to get rid of them. So this woman started Ruby's Pig Ranch, mm-hmm. and so she gave a talk about pigs and emotion and affect. It was very interesting. And then Richard from the Mycological Society of Toronto, mm-hmm. who we knew from Diane and I knew from being members of the MST, he's a slime mold expert. And he has a collection of slime molds he keeps in his freezer. And you have to look at them with a magnifying glass. And he brought them all, and the guy is fascinating. He gave a talk on slime molds, and then we all lined up at the bar with a magnifying glass and looked at the slime molds, mm-hmm. Which was absolutely fascinating.
Hmm. Very interesting. Can you, as somebody who's out and about in a lot of different places and involved with the C Magazine and in the art scene, can you pinpoint any trends that you would say are going on right now?
Oh, this is such a subjective question.
Yes, of course.
But you know, but it's one I suppose I'm responsible to answer. There's a bunch of, for me, there are a bunch of important trends that I would locate in Toronto and in Canada. or us as having some major stake in them. One is thinking about the image, and especially with Contact On right now, mm-hmm. with the Ryerson Image Center, with institutions like TPW, there's a really sophisticated discourse around the image right now and about how it's really being transformed by social media, mm-hmm. By the internet, and how... And also shifting notions of not just sociality, but temporality.
Mm-hmm.
And right now is a moment to think about this with Amy McDonnell's show at the Ryerson Image Center, people like John Rathman, who the Nine Eyes of Google project, mm-hmm. Oliver Hussein at TPW, the Raymond Beaujolais show at the Coffer is really interesting in those regards,
mm-hmm.
Where he's taken these scans of ethnographic films off his iPhone, and it creates this beautiful interference pattern, and he's made these incredible textual overlays. And so there's very subtle reflections on the state of the image,
mm-hmm.
that's happening within visual art. I want to say we within performance art, and this is one thing that comes out of our upcoming issue, is the very transdisciplinary nature of contemporary art practice.
Mm-hmm.
I went a few weeks ago to see an event at the Toronto Dance Theatre,
mm-hmm.
Something that Christopher House organizes every year, where he pairs visual artists with dancers, and it was amazing,
mm-hmm.
to see artists working with dancers, and to think about the body in contemporary art practice,
mm-hmm.
which I think has been neglected in a lot of ways. And so I think there's a very, very tentative turn back towards the body, but not through traditional means, through its relationship to the image, for instance. And
mm-hmm.
you can see that in some of those performances.
Mm-hmm.
I think that around art writing, there is a lot that's happening, and about writing as an art practice. And it's something that became more apparent when we edited an issue on poetry, and to see how people are working, and the way that it really helped us think about the very performative nature of writing, of writers who are using scripts, for instance, who are performing readings and texts aloud. Cheyenne Turian's project, No Reading After the Internet, is mm-hmm. one. And so there's a turn towards the social lives
mm-hmm.
of texts.
Mm-hmm.
Will Holder, who's in a recent issue on documentation, talks about the liveness of a text. And so we're seeing text being seen as this living, breathing entity which is performed all the time. And so as a magazine, we're really invested in this idea, and it's becoming absorbed in the magazine, and then we in turn reflect upon it.
Mm-hmm.
So writing is something which I think is really crucial in a lot of artists' practices
mm-hmm.
these days. A really big thing right now, I feel, is indigeneity.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm looking at the artists who've been in the magazine, some of the best artists in the country right now, and I made up a list, I thought they're almost like there's a lot of very, very strong indigenous artists.
Mm-hmm.
Nadia Meyer, who won the Sobey Award in 2014. And again, this year, Brenda Draney is up, just shortlisted.
Mm.
Ursula Johnson, who's from Cape Breton, where I'm also from. I'm just thrilled. As a Cape Breton artist who is making it nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Linkletter.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Benesina Baden, who was on our cover 2 issues ago. Walter Scott. And there's also really strong indigenous critics and curators. Richard Hill, Wanda Nanabush. So I think we're at a really great moment here in Canada in terms of thinking through, you know, Canada's history, but also through very subtle and rich contemporary practices and how artists can help us perhaps think our way forward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Amish, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. And this has been Amish Morel, the editor of C Magazine. Thank you once again.
Great, thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.